Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to the Morning Show podcast for our huge second episode. I can't believe they had us back, Laz.
I can, Coles. We did a 2-for-1 deal. They're all going to have us back for the second one. Ahead for you, Australian Idol winner Kate DeRouge opens up about her health battles and her road to recovery.
And we say hello again to Sally Obermeter. Sally's in to talk family and food and her growing fashion business.
And we've recruited a self-confessed maths nerd to break down the odds of winning those massive lotto jackpots. He's going to tell us if we should play the same numbers every single week.
I wonder. Plus, we've got singer Jack Vigen, comedian Celeste Barber is going to swing by, and the black market beauty products putting Australians at risk.
But first for you, the superstar stylist with royal connections, Jessica Mulrooney, has dressed everyone from Mindy Kaling to Shania Twain and, of course, Meghan Markle. Now she's using her own fame for good. Jessica Mulrooney may be a name you have read in a magazine or heard on the news, but how well do you really know the celebrity stylist?
Behind the glamorous shots we like on Instagram, Jessica has been gearing up for her biggest year yet, and she's got a message you need to hear. And we're super excited. Jessica Mulrooney joins us live from Toronto. Good morning, Jessica.
Hello.
Hi. It has
so
been
so nice to see you guys.
Nice to finally catch up with you as well.
Okay. Yeah, Ben is lurking in the corner, by the way, so jealous because he really wants to talk to you guys. I think it was like about a year and a half ago we were in Australia and he was on the show and he hasn't stopped talking about you guys since, I swear.
Well, you keep him lurking. You keep him lurking because we've got to catch up with you first.
Yeah, I hope you had nice things to say. Jessica, it's been a rollercoaster 12 months for the whole world, hasn't it? First things first,
it has.
How are you going?
I'm doing okay. We are in lockdown here in Toronto still. So that's not great. Although we are in full winter mode with snow on the ground, it's cold. So it's not as bad to be at home. I'm staring at you guys and your pictures on Instagram. And I know that the weather is quite lovely in Australia right now. So, but you know, things are looking up. Hopefully, you know, spring is coming and things will open up soon and we'll get back to normal as quickly as possible.
Now, you're a stylist, of course, a fabulous stylist, but while the world has been at a standstill, you haven't had too many red carpets to get ready for, right? You must be excited that we're sort of maybe turned a corner and things will be getting back to normal at some point soon.
You know what? It's been a nice break, I do have to say. I don't personally miss a red carpet because, I mean, hopefully you can't see what I'm wearing underneath this, but it's elasticized pants. So I don't know how ready I am to actually get into like anything that buttons up or zips up. But I do miss dressing wonderful women. Like Mindy, I think it was about a year ago, we did the Oscars together and we had such a great time. I think we did 4 outfits in 2 days and it was a lot of pressure, but I love that pressure and I love making women feel great in their clothing. Working with someone like Mindy has been so incredible because she's not only smart and beautiful and talented, but she also takes a little bit fashion risk, which I like.
Mm. You spent your lockdown helping brides-to-be. This is something that you do to your fabulous stylist to brides. I mean, gee, brides have had it tough during the pandemic. How tough planning a wedding during this time, right?
You know, usually I get a lot of messages from brides like asking, you know, is this dress something that you would like or is this tablescape something that would look great? But during the pandemic, I got a lot of messages from brides really discouraged. It's been really tough for them, you know, postponing a wedding, planning something so large, not knowing when you can actually celebrate in the way that you want to celebrate. But I've been personally working with a lot of brides that just don't actually have the option because there's, you know, somebody in their family that's sick, or they just can't wait, you know, a year or 2 years to celebrate in the way that they wanted to. So I've become slightly, you know, an expert in small, intimate weddings. And I have to say, all of the women that I've worked with, all the brides and the grooms, they love the intimate wedding. Mm. They thought they wanted 200 people at their wedding, but having 15 was just perfect for them.
So intimate and so much cheaper. A quick Google
and
news
so
search.
So much cheaper, Larry. Nice.
A quick Google news search of your name, and we're inundated with headlines, of course, many of which are obviously false. So how determined are you at this point to take control and write your own narrative?
You know, that's a funny one. I mean, I'm sure you both have dealt with similar things in terms of, you know, the lowbrow media, which, you know, creates false headlines and crazy things. And I think that all of us can get used to those things and laugh about them. I think the sad thing is that mainstream media has taken all of those headlines and have repurposed them. And that makes it a lot harder to, you know, these are media outlets that we've trusted for so long and we've, you know, read and honored. And now it's just become about clickbait. And so the fact that they're repurposing headlines from such lowbrow media outlets, I think is a very sad thing. And it becomes much more difficult to tell your own story.
So what you've done, you've started the Female Empowerment Project. Tell us about that and why you felt it was so important to start something like that.
Yeah, well, I started a charity 12 years ago called the Shoebox Project. I don't know if you guys know about that. It's a charity that's still going. And what we do is deliver boxes with small luxuries to women in need in shelters. And what we quickly discovered was it wasn't necessarily about what was in the box. It was the connection between a woman that made the box and the woman in the shelter, making them know that they were not alone, that somebody was thinking about them, that someone in their community cared. And that was the most important part, was the connection. And so taking that into the Female Empowerment Project, obviously, through this pandemic, small businesses have been hurting tremendously. Yeah. But mostly female-owned small businesses have hurt more than ever.
Yeah.
And so what we started to do was I got three of my girlfriends who happen to be experts in totally different fields, one in finance, one in manufacturing, one in tech. And we would get onto the phone and do private Zoom calls with about 13 to 15 different women that own small businesses, and just help them pivot and help them get new strategies to just try to like make it during this pandemic.
Yeah, such a tremendous project. Now, we heard in the intro your impressive resume, but it's your role as a mother that means the most to you.
I think you guys made it look a little bit more impressive than it was, by the way.
That's very impressive.
Thank you for that.
No, it's our pleasure. We hope you like it. Now, we saw those adorable photos from the royal wedding, of course. How's it been spending more time with the boys at home during the last year?
Oh, my gosh. They are so amazing, those twins. I was actually ready to tell you guys a story about the wedding.
Yeah,
do you want to hear it?
Yes,
yeah,
sure do.
Okay.
Tell.
So I have identical twins. So they're naturally magnetized, right? Like they just do not separate. And during all the rehearsals at the royal wedding, they were just messing up. They just couldn't get it right. And it was really scary as a parent. They would just, you know, catch the veil. They couldn't do it properly. And we were supposed to practice with them at the hotel with a veil. And I decided not to do that. And what I said to them was, you know, there's two sides, there's two aisles. You both look identical. You need to do the same show for each side. And that's how they separated.
And were able to manage what they did, which I'm still in awe of. I don't know how they did it. But it wasn't an easy task, I'll tell you. Things did not look good leading up to the wedding.
Well, they pulled it off beautifully, almost stole the show. And little Ivy, of course, was a flower girl as well. Speaking of motherhood, Jess.
I can't hear you anything.
Oh, you can't hear us? Well, we're still here. We can hear you. Can you hear us okay? Hello?
I can't hear anything. Sorry.
That's okay.
Ben's helping me.
Hi, Ben.
This is my tech guy.
Hello.
Maybe the battery's run out.
See.
Oh, now I hear you.
Okay, I'm
He's gonna come in.
Thanks for your tech support.
Larry, great to see you. Kylie, great to see you.
Hi. We needed to ask you though, speaking of motherhood, Jessica, you must be so excited for the Duchess of Sussex. Your friend Meghan expecting another baby.
Of course, yeah. I mean, who wouldn't be excited for something like that? They're tremendous parents. And you know, Archie needs a little play date, like a little sister or brother to work with.
Yeah. Hey, great to see you. Ben, you doing okay? You wearing sweatpants under there as well? Because what we're getting is this really nice top.
No, he's wearing jeans.
I put jeans on for you,
Larry. Thanks for dressing up the TV, Ben. Thanks for dressing up.
I got a haircut for you yesterday.
Yeah.
I even got a haircut. Jess gave me a haircut yesterday.
Jessica did it. You're a very game husband.
Yes, I asked her. I asked her to
never do it again.
I asked her to give me the Larry, but then she said she was uncomfortable taking so much off the top.
Well, Kylie did this one originally, so Jess, get a move on that. Hey, great to see you guys. Really good to see you. We're right out of time, but we could chat all day.
All the best, guys.
Thanks for putting on your best sweatpants for us, Jess. We appreciate that.
Fabulous Mulroney's all the way from Toronto this morning. To find out more about the Female Empowerment Project, head across to our website. We'll point you in the right direction.
Well, spanning two decades and broadcasting more than 50 adaptations to 150 countries, the Idol franchise has become one of the most successful entertainment shows in the world. Now, here in Australia, it's turned countless up-and-comers into household names, including the winner from 2005, Kate DeRujo.
Kate was destined for success, climbing the charts as a solo artist and touring the country with multi-platinum-selling Young Divas. But what came instead was a spectacular fall from grace as a singer publicly battled with her weight, mental health issues, and made headlines for all the wrong reasons.
Well, the now 35-year-old has been flying under the radar these last few years. Kate's road to redemption is sounding pretty sweet.
Sounds great. Looks great too. Kate DeRujo joins us live from Melbourne. Hi, Kate.
Morning, guys. How are we?
We are terrific. How are you, more to the point?
I'm really well, thank you. Really well.
16 years since Idol, your win. When you see the vision back, do you love watching that back? How does it make you feel?
Oh, look, it's a range of emotions watching that back. You know, so many things have happened, good, bad, and otherwise in those 16 years. Yeah, but it certainly brings a smile to my face, especially that image there, you know. It was a pretty incredible time.
Kate, the Young Divas still plagued by feud rumours. Are those stories true, or do you only sort of have fond memories of those times?
Look, to me, I only have fond memories. Like, it was a crazy time, that's for sure. But at the end of the day, irrespective of what anybody said, like, it gave me the opportunity to tour the country and do incredible things. So, like, I mean, it was an amazing time for me personally.
And when you say, look at the girls in there, like such talent in that group, Kate, like amazing.
It was. I mean, we were all four very individual, very talented girls, you know, just all trying to do our thing and you know, yeah, well, I don't know what else to say. I look back at it with happy memories.
Kate, in 2015, you had an interview with Kyle and Jackie O. You admitted to, and this is a quote, losing the plot after the all-girl group disbanded. How dark did things get for you?
Look, it's no secret that mental health and depression and addiction and all that stuff has been a big part of my story. You know, it's a pretty big topic and one that I'm really happy to talk about, but potentially a little bit heavy for 9:30 on a Thursday morning. But look, the good news is that, you know, I'm nearly 3 years in recovery now. It was a dark time, but an incredible learning experience now that I'm out the other end.
So 3 years sober, 3 years drug and alcohol free, and finding love, importantly.
Definitely finding love. You know, I've my life has completely changed in the last 3 years. It looks very different, and I'm very lucky to have found an incredibly supportive partner and man to have in my life.
Okay. Hey, music's still very much a part of your life. Clearly, you've been spotted on Instagram singing with your cousin and doing a few cheeky gigs here and there. Can we expect a new release from Kate DeRouge anytime soon?
Look, never say never. You know, I have learnt one thing in the last 3 years is that I love music no matter what. And I found a whole new love for it, being able to do it with a clear mind and a clear heart. You know, if the right opportunity came along, who'd know? But the biggest focus in my life these days is my happiness and my well-being.
So what is the main difference, Kate, with the music? If you look back on music you may have produced, let's call it 4 years ago, 5 years ago, versus what you do now. What's the difference you're seeing in the creative process?
In my creative process?
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess the creative process for me these days is that I have the space to be totally free of judgment, and it's not for anybody else but myself. And that's a really beautiful space to be able to create from. You know, it's not for anybody else, so I'm able to be totally honest.
Do sometimes you wish you weren't so much in the public eye? Clearly it works from a creative perspective and releasing music and being a performer, but the last couple of years would have been easier for you out of the public eye probably?
Oh, certainly. Like, you know, those last few years when things got really dark, it would have been nice for nobody to know my name, but that wasn't the situation. You know, it is what it is, and what happened. But, you know, the last 3 years I've been pretty off the radar and really in my own world, and it's been a pretty personal time, so it's okay.
And what are you doing with yourself these days, Kate? Still producing music? We see you still singing.
I'm still singing, just doing life. I'm actually studying a Cert 3 in civil construction.
What? Yeah. What does that mean?
It just means I'm learning to operate big machines and excavators and build stuff and get my hands dirty. Really random, but I've really enjoyed it. You know, I got out there and did traffic for a while, traffic management, and it's just sort of carried on to looking at other avenues in the construction land, and I love it. Yeah.
Okay, where does that end up? Where does that take you?
It could take me anywhere, who knows? It just opens up lots and lots of opportunities to work on, you know, big civil sites and building, you know, big projects and, yeah.
Good stuff.
I love it. Yeah.
And you can keep the crew entertained at Smoko with the...
Absolutely. Yeah.
Kate, really lovely to see you, looking and sounding so great, and really appreciate the catch-up this morning.
Thanks, Kylie.
Thank you,
great
Kate.
Great to see you, Kate.
Thanks, Larry.
Prince Philip has spent his fifth night in hospital, with Prince Charles paying an emotional visit to see the 99-year-old.
Yeah, to find out how the rest of the family has responded, Royal Commentator Ange Mollard is here with us. Hi, Ange.
Hi.
I mean, we saw Prince Charles leaving the hospital. They said he appeared teary, he appeared a little upset. This doesn't augur well, does it? What's the latest?
Well, look, there's two views on this. One is that he went to see his father. He hasn't seen him since before Christmas. Although it's really interesting because, of course, COVID restrictions in hospitals in the UK at the moment are very tight. So the fact that he's going to see him speaks volumes about, you know, either him wanting to see his father or the gravity of his illness. That said, afterwards he returned straight to Highgrove. He didn't go to Buckingham Palace. He didn't stay overnight in London. So you have to imagine that actually his father's probably, you know, doing okay, and certainly that's the word that we're getting from the palace, that they're taking that it's an abundance of caution, that he's had his fifth night there, but that he walked in and that, you know, he's in good spirits.
Because Charles would have stayed closer
if there was anything to be worried about. Yes.
Prince Harry is reported to be isolating in his LA mansion just in case he needs to make that dash back to the UK. Do we know if he's spoken to the Queen at this
point? Apparently he has. Reports out of the UK this morning, multiple newspapers are saying that he has in fact picked up the phone to his grandmother to ask about how Prince Philip is going. Of course he would be terribly worried. He's isolating so that he's apparently got a private jet on standby if he needs to go back to the UK. But I mean, this is the time that you'd feel terribly far away, wouldn't you?
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, mm-hmm. Still on Harry, we saw that announcement over the weekend from the palace, officially confirming that they're severing all ties, official ties, patronage is taken back. This was like, wow. They said they were going to review the situation in 12 months, and boy, they did.
You're right, Kylie. They've moved very quickly. As the Queen has said there, that all these charitable Commonwealth and military appointments are now being returned to Her Majesty, and that she basically says that that having a life outside the royal family doesn't work with a life of service. Now, Harry and Meghan have responded almost instantly by saying public service is universal. It is seen as so rude to the Queen, so disrespectful. I mean, it's just appalling timing. William has come out and said, well, there's reports in the Times, a very reputable newspaper, saying that Prince William is shocked and saddened by the disrespect that he's shown to the Queen, particularly at a time when her husband is in hospital.
Okay. Now, the timing of this interview with Oprah, it's shocking. There's so much else going on, right? Prince Philip is unwell. How do you think Harry, not so much Meghan, but how do you think Harry would be feeling now? I mean, they've got all those people to answer to and everything's going on back in the UK.
That's absolutely right. And making that determination between Meghan and Harry, Meghan would be fine. Meghan has, she has this history of not having great ties with her family. Harry does. Harry will be missing his family. He'll be feeling, I would imagine, we can't ever say how someone else might be feeling, but as you go into an interview like this, where we have to expect that a woman of Oprah's calibre is going to pull out details from them about how they feel upon leaving the royal family, Harry must be feeling incredibly anxious at this time to be even talking about something like that. When his grandmother, his 94-year-old grandmother, who has given a life of duty, is sitting there next to his wife, who's talking about their sorts of duty and their sorts of service, which are in quite, stark contrast to what the royal family has spent, generations doing.
Mm. Yeah. Headlines around the world when Meghan announced her second pregnancy on Valentine's Day, which is happy news.
It is.
No matter what else is going on, it is happy news. There's rumours that she might be having twin girls. Is there any credence to those sort of...
I think we all love to speculate, don't we? We all love to think about twins. And, of course, there have been twins. Princess Mary, of course, had twins. But, look, nobody, I don't think any of us but her obstetrician knows. Look, New Ideas reporting that it's twin girls. I don't think we can know that. Of course, we'd love it to be twin girls, wouldn't we? But
I'm feeling triplets.
Are you?
In my waters, deep. I just sense... that it's time.
That comes from a man who has two children. Any mother who's already got a child, if you were to say, oh, no, I'm sure some people would say triplets, but if you said triplets to me after my first child, I would be...
Kick me. To the most recent royal baby news, Princess Eugenie has revealed the name of her baby boy.
Gorgeous name. I love this name. What do you guys think? August. She's called her son August.
August.
Her great-grandfather, times five, Queen Victoria's husband, Prince Albert, had that in his name. What's really interesting about this name is that she's included Philip in the name as a tribute to her grandfather, who of course turns 100 in June. Prince Andrew doesn't get a mention, but in her Instagram story she did say that it was his birthday this weekend, so did make mention of him. But how gorgeous. I love that name. And of course her mother, Sarah Ferguson, gave her this very unusual name, Eugenie, and of course she's given her son a fairly unusual name as well. But I love it. I love the fact they look the same, the babies.
They're gorgeous, aren't they? See, his name's August. I think he'll get called Gus.
Of course
he'll get Gus.
Oh, I would have
and then
for
the royal
Orgy.
And then the royal family will have a Gus and an Archie.
It's complete.
Which is very happy about it. Don't you think August will get Gus?
I would have gone Augie, but okay. I think it's nice.
No, I think Gus.
But isn't it Gust?
Gust. No,
I think
he'll get Gus, called Gus. We'll wait and see.
Let's wait and see.
Call him.
Kylie, you're an agenda setter, aren't you?
Yes, I am. It may have been pointed out to me by a producer, but that's okay. Thank you. Thank you, Anne.
They say a light purse is a heavy curse.
If you ever daydreamed about supersizing your bank balance with a winning ticket, you're certainly not alone. It's estimated 1 in 6 Australians, 1 in 6, bought an entry for last week's $50 million Powerball draw, with a lucky Mackay man coming forward just yesterday to claim the top prize.
But what are your actual chances of winning the lottery? Are the odds really stacked against us? Or is it a case of you've got to be in it to win it? Well, I'm sure it's that. To break down the stats, we welcome mathematician and numbers nerd Simon Pampin, live from Melbourne. Welcome to the show. Nice to see you.
Hey, nice to see you guys too. Thanks for having me on.
So we know how this works, right? We pick some numbers, buy a ticket, fingers crossed, hope for the best. But what's the actual likelihood of taking out a first division prize?
Well, as a mathematician, it doesn't look good. But if you want to know, it's 1 in 45,379,620 for the Oz Lotto. And then for the Powerball, it's 1 in 76,676,600. So slim.
Yeah, but thanks for rounding that up for us anyway.
But not impossible.
But slim, but yeah, worth
but
a shot,
impossible.
Right? You gotta, let's put it in perspective. You've been checking out some odds for events that are more likely to happen than actually winning the lotto, yeah?
Yeah, and it's kind of surprising because, for example, like if you wanted to bet on who's going to be the next president of the United States, Kim Kardashian is 1 in 81. And she actually beats Beyonce, who's at 1 in 151, which I don't necessarily agree with. And then you've got like people have worked out like getting a four-leaf clover is 1 in 10,000, which means your traditional Aussie backyard has got at least 50 of them. Yeah. A supermodel, 1 in 88,000. I can't claim to understand that at all.
Dating a supermodel, all right. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. You could be a supermodel, Larry.
Thank you.
And 1 in 662,000 for Olympic gold. So, yeah, so it actually would make more sense if you train to try and get an Olympic gold than trying to win the lotto.
How okay, funny. Got it. I'm not liking my chances in any of this, actually. A man in the US recently won his sixth $250,000 jackpot. So it can happen.
Yeah.
I mean, why is this guy winning six lotteries, for heaven's sake? What can we do to increase our chances?
Well, mathematically, you can't really increase your chances very much. What you can increase is the amount that you win. So the mathematics says that any seven numbers are going to come up equally as likely. And we can kind of think, oh, we can game the system or we can kind of like see patterns, but that's just the nature of probability. It's just random. But you want to try and get numbers that other people don't pick, because if you've got the same numbers as someone else, you have to share the money. And who wants to do that?
Oh, what a stupid concept. Stupid. We've got to talk.
Yes, exactly.
We've got to talk. Just on that point, we've got to talk about the most and least drawn numbers, yeah, because we're better off picking numbers that other people don't pick, but they're numbers sometimes that are least likely to come up, yeah?
Yes. So that's true. There are. This is the nature of probability. Some numbers are actually appearing more than others. You're not going to like this, I don't think. But so some numbers are actually kind of hot numbers because they are appearing more often, and some are cold numbers because they're less likely. So you've got like Oz Lotto, 28, 33. 7 is a hot number, 25, 2 and 27.
So these are the ones that come out most often in Oz Lotto. Okay, we're going to commit these ones to memory.
No, not by much.
Because
if everyone does that, then you'll get less money. You'll only get 20 million instead of 100 million.
Simon, Larry's onto it. That's exactly right.
Can we just go back to that, Simon? I want to ask the question. 25, 27, 28. I would never put those because I think they're too close.
But you shouldn't put them. These are bad numbers.
I'd rather win a smaller amount and actually win.
No, you wouldn't.
Then
no, you wouldn't.
Not win. Okay.
You'd not be happy with your $18.50.
Let's have a look at some more numbers. We've got some other numbers here.
Yeah, let's look at more numbers. That's better. So, yeah, these are the cold numbers. 10, 38, 42, meaning of life, 24, 18, 11. So these numbers here have appeared less often. But I do want to reiterate that this is just the nature of probability. It's the nature of randomness.
I see. So, sorry, by doing that, you're distancing yourself from us buying a ticket and saying, we saw the guy on the morning show. He said these are the numbers. Is that what we're... Is that terms and conditions apply?
You have to be in it to win it.
We need to see the Powerball because we just saw that. This is the most drawn numbers in Powerball.
Yeah.
So
there's
that,
7 again.
Most drawn in Powerball equals the less drawn in Oz Lotto, 11 on this one. This is interesting. See, look, 7, 11, 9. Least drawn. Look at
15,
that.
15, 34, 13. 13's there, which is unlucky for some.
Look at that, 12, 13, 15.
Another common question is whether you should play the same numbers every week, you know, everyone's birthday in the family, all that sort of thing. Or do you get that automatically generated quick pick thing?
Doing the random numbers. I think psychologically it's good to stick to your numbers because at least that way you feel good about it. But I'm sorry to say, mathematically, any combination of seven numbers, six and one of the Powerball scenario, it's just all as equally as likely.
Well, thank goodness Kylie and I are both lining up to represent Australia in Tokyo in pole vaulting. It sounds like we've got a much better shot at that.
You've got your numbers in the right order.
Hey, good to talk to you. That's really interesting.
Interesting and yet very depressing. Yeah. Thank you, Simon.
Thanks, guys.
Celeste Barber is the Aussie comedian taking on some of the world's biggest stars with her social media send-ups, and we love her for it. Yeah. From supermodel Cindy Crawford's iconic Pepsi commercial to Hilaria Baldwin's bathroom booty blaster and her latest celebrity conquest, makeup mogul Kylie Jenner and her sister Kendall Jenner.
Oh, she's fabulous. The comedy queen also famously raised more than $50 million for the Australian bushfire relief in 2020. Well, now Celeste has a new role and she's putting her best face forward for a new makeup campaign.
Yeah, we sent journalist and fashion editor Melissa Hoyer along to her photo shoot for an exclusive behind-the-scenes look.
Celeste Barber's hilarious Instagram versus reality series shot her into the social media stratosphere. Her parodies of celebrities' perfect pics have won over a legion of fans, 7.6 million to be exact.
You've had a phenomenal rise, but, you know, you've worked and worked and worked and worked.
Yeah. Well, I like to think that I'm a overnight success about 20 years in the making. So I just, I knew what I was doing was funny, but I didn't think it would blow up the way it has. So it's awesome.
Are there a couple that stick out in your mind as the ones that, boy, I still love that, and even you laugh at them?
Yeah, usually like as scantily clad as I can be, like the less clothes, and dancing, any form of people dancing. I'm like, I have to do that. And physically maiming myself is usually pretty funny. I skinned my knee falling into the beach. A surfboard's cracked me on my nose. Like, I suffer for my art.
You
do. Not worry. Yeah.
You've always got, you know, Arpy. You've got a hot husband to help you.
Yeah, he's good.
I mean, he has developed such a following.
Hasn't he?
Are you furious?
Yes, because he's only got a following because of me and because he's hot. That's it. Like, so, yes, I'm furious, but he's fine.
Now Celeste is about to inject some humour into the beauty business as the new face of MCO Beauty.
MCO Beauty is awesome for everyday people who care about how they look but can't afford $11 billion to put a face on.
And she's in good company. Dani Minogue, Rosie Huntington-Whiteley, and Hailey Bieber have all fronted campaigns for the big sister brand Model Co.
How excited are you with, of course, Celeste and her involvement with MCO Beauty?
We were thrilled to have Celeste on board. As you know, we've had many ambassadors over the years. MCO Beauty is a new part of our empire. Obviously, we've had Model Co now for 20 years, and with the launch of MCO Beauty, it's all about luxe for less. So I thought to myself, who is the perfect quintessential Australian woman who could align to our brand, and how could you go past Celeste Barber?
You're the mum of two teenage girls. Are they into makeup? Please tell me they are.
Lucy and Emily are absolutely into makeup. In fact, I get emails now and text messages, mum, can you bring home this, that and the other? So obviously all their friends are on the internet thinking, oh God, their mum owns a beauty brand.
They must have great parties. Everyone probably goes home with a show bag.
Yeah, they do. They're always at my house, knowing me. They're always going home with Model Co and MCO show bags.
May have taken some from set.
You have not.
I did. I got this. This is my favourite stuff.
Because everyone keeps
this
a bit
hydro-glow
in their hair.
Yeah, and I... What? I told you I don't like paying for things. It's free. This is great for your brows.
You know, there's security
as
up the front.
As if you're not going to take
exactly,
stuff.
I'm taking the entire barrel. But there's security.
Mega balm and my favourite... Oh, it's warm.
I hope there's
it's
nothing...
It's warm. No, this is...
Where did you get that from?
What else have I got back here?
You haven't got any.
Oh, no, it's all right. That's just my clip-in hair. Just my fake hair.
Since her rise to international fame, Celeste has starred on the cover of Vogue and was personally invited to New York Fashion Week by Mr. Tom Ford himself.
Is there a post that you've looked at and thought, you know what, I wish I didn't do that?
Yeah. Oh, my God, yes.
Hang on, should that have been posts?
Yeah, there are a few of those where I've gone, oh, wow. And even sometimes when I post stuff, I'm like... Come on, just buy what you're selling, Celeste. Body positive, just put it out there, put it out there. But, yeah, I can't watch some of them. I'm like, wow, mate.
But meanwhile, we can just watch them and watch them.
I can appreciate that they're funny, but when it's me doing it, like my son sometimes like, Mum, is that inappropriate? I'm like, probably, but it's paying the mortgage. Yeah.
Celeste, love you.
Oh,
Australia
thanks,
loves you.
Honey.
The world
nice
loves
to see you. No, they're mine. Okay. Get your own.
That Instagram makes me laugh every single time you go on.
She is simply fabulous. MCO Beauty is available at Woolworths and Big W stores nationally or online at mcobeauty.com.au.
Melissa Hoy would have grabbed some stuff on the way.
Oh, sure. 100%.
We're waiting for 100%. Melissa. We're waiting for our present.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Well, the Australian Bureau of Statistics has released preliminary figures for retail trade in January, offering a snapshot of the state of the economy during the pandemic. The good news, turnover rose 10.7% compared to January 2020.
The food industry led the way as supermarkets recovered from a dip in December, but it wasn't all positive, with clothing, footwear, household goods and department stores all significantly impacted by the three-day lockdown in Brisbane.
So we welcome the CEO of the Australian Retailers Association, Paul Zara. Nice to see you again, Paul. We love talking all things shopping with you.
Good morning.
Let's start with those January figures. 10% rise compared to January last year. We've got to remember January last year was pre-COVID.
So it's a stellar performance.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter which way you look at it. It's an amazing performance and an increase on December, of course. So it's pretty amazing. And what it doesn't tell you, though, is an uneven performance. We're seeing some winners and some absolute losers through that. So we're just keeping a very close eye out for what's about to happen next. There's approximately $5 billion of government stimulus each month that will come out of the economy. So we sort of need to see what that does. Mm. And of course, people can't travel right now. So people are actually spending their money predominantly on their household and on their homes, which is what we're seeing.
Let's shift our focus to Victoria now. And the recent snap lockdown cost more than $1 billion lost in retail. Very concerning if that happened on its own, but that's at the end of a horror 12 months.
Well, this is a really good point, Larry. So for retailers to plan, they don't really know what they're up for as they trade through this year. And of course, it's based on every state premier's decision around putting a lockdown in place. So it was a snap lockdown in Victoria, which caused a lot of anxiety, particularly for small business and particularly for travel retail as well, that, you know, they've got no idea how to plan where to go. So it's problematic.
OK, let's look at JobKeeper. Mm. So we see homewares company Adairs, their profits jumped 200%. So they're going to pay back their JobKeeper payments. They're not the only ones. We've got Nick Scali, Domino's Pizza, Toyota. What do we think about this? I mean, there's no legal obligation, is there?
No,
is this just a gesture of goodwill?
Absolutely. So there's no legal obligation, but we're seeing retailers demonstrate really good sense of leadership and goodwill and paying it back. So it's for every retailer to make that decision. And, of course, we think it's appropriate and we're encouraging where companies can afford to do it, they should be doing it.
Yeah, it does send a good message, doesn't it?
It does send.
Not all good news for retailers. H&M are predicted to close like 7 stores now.
Yeah.
Well, what we're seeing through COVID is an acceleration of trends. So physical stores continue to shrink and there's this massive trajectory on online trading. So retailers are reassessing each lease and deciding which ones they want to go ahead with. So in the greater picture, this is great for the customer because they get service the way that they want to be serviced, and most have been moving to an online platform to be able to actually shop.
Is that what H&M is doing, going more
absolutely,
online?
Absolutely. So we're seeing every retailer's done an amazing job in actually pivoting towards online. We're seeing double-digit growth in the online trading.
Okay, let's talk about alcohol. Non-alcoholic beer sales doubled in some major liquor chains.
Well, this is a really interesting trend. So we saw alcohol going plus 27, nearly 30% up through most of the pandemic. And of course, it makes sense.
I think that's conservative.
Well, it's probably conservative, but you know, it's interesting because of course we were all self-medicating and I guess liquor becomes a really good way to do that. But what we are seeing now as we're moving out of lockdown is there's this massive move towards health. So non-alcoholic drinks are a really good way to get off the alcohol, I guess. And we're seeing a major trend that has to do with anything from activity or clothing, right through to any sort, type of sport. So that's a pleasing stat.
Retailers attached to the travel sector still taking a massive hit thanks to these border closures.
Well, this is a sector we're really concerned about because we all love to travel, right? And we all love to shop duty-free. So what we're concerned about every day counts right now. There's been no announcement what's happening with these particular pockets of trade that are not performing. They're up to 90% down. Of course, there's no travel available for consumers, so they can't trade. So we're seeing that a lot of these companies are now planning for significant redundancies, and that's important. So if we don't get any message right now from the government around what happens after JobKeeper, we may have a problem.
Just generally, as we say goodbye, but what's the feeling in the retail sector? What
It's one
renewed
of,
optimism?
Yeah, it's almost like a rebirth. That's probably the best way for me to describe it because of this acceleration of trends, there's a renewed level of confidence in business and from a consumer point of view. So retailers are quickly investing as much as they could in the digital space to make sure they leverage the new sort of COVID normal.
Okay, terrific. Thanks for your time this morning. Good Welcome. To see you as always.
Well, over the 13 and a half years of The Morning Show, we've welcomed a lot of singers from TV talent shows, but only a handful have been able to translate that on-screen success into a bona fide career path.
And that's exactly what our next guest has done as a teenager on AGT 10 years ago. We watched little Jack Vidgen become an instant superstar.
But like all kids, they grow up, don't they? Now the 24-year-old is living his best life and still making music, having just released a brand new single, Pray.
Hey, Jack Vidgen, live on the couch. Welcome, mate. Lovely
Hi.
To see you.
So good
Jack.
To see you guys.
First things first, 10 years ago since you won AGT, do you ever
so
think
crazy.
About that moment, or is it just like this long, old, distant, blurry
no,
memory?
No, all the time.
Really?
Every day, especially at the moment, being like 10 years, it's just everything feels very full circle. And it's just, no, I think about it every day at the moment.
And you think about it with gratitude? Because finding fame at 14, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's definitely gratitude. And I had the... Australia's Got Talent was like the best time of my life. It was pretty incredible. I think what happens afterwards is always up in the air. And you go through things in life, especially in those kind of formative years. But the show was... I had the best experience ever.
So today's a huge day for you. You've just released your brand new single, Pray. We saw a clip of it there. Do you still get nervous sort of putting that stuff out now? Or is it like...
Totally.
Here's another one.
Well, I've only released like since... kind of AGT days, I've only released one song, which was for Eurovision Australia Decides just over a year ago. So this is kind of my second release in like 8 years.
So nervous, right?
Very nervous.
What's the early response been like, Jack?
It's been incredible.
Yeah.
It's been really, really nice, really, really warm. It's very, very different to anything I've done. But no, the response has been so great.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the lyrics are important. There's one line in particular. I own my body. Don't you bleeping start me. Tell us
bleeping.
About that. The bleeping.
Bleeping.
Well, or we could do the radio version. Can you tell us about the lyric and what that means?
It's kind of evolved. I wrote it about 2 years ago, and it's very deep meaning for me. It's about my relationship I've had with different vices kind of over the last few years. Mm. And I wanted to marry that with a dance track because I've kind of lived my life since coming out in clubs and in club culture as a club kid. And I've found a really beautiful home in that. And so kind of bringing those two together, bringing a heavy meaning with a bit of a dance track.
Yes. Got to have a dance track.
Got to have a dance track.
Now, this isn't the only way people can hear you sing. You've joined this new app where basically fans can get this sort of personal serenade from you.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah,
talk
totally.
Us through that. How does that work?
Well, so basically you go on their website and you search up my profile and then I can make like a personalized video singing to you.
Oh, I think I'd like that.
I'll do yours for free, though.
Does Kylie come roll off the tongue?
Kylie!
Oh, that's good.
I'll take that as a yes.
You get an actual song on the app.
I love it. You're performing at Mardi Gras.
I am. I actually have some presents for you guys.
Oh, thank you.
I'm performing with Koala.
Yes.
Mardi Gras.
Oh, thank you, my
so
love.
So I've got some little plushies.
What does this mean to you to be performing at Mardi Gras?
It means a lot. I've never performed at Mardi Gras before. Yeah. I've never been a part of the parade or marching at all.
Yeah.
So it's really, really cool. So, and with Koala, like the theme at the moment is being comfortable in your own skin. And I think for me, like, that's definitely been a journey over the years to get
sure.
to that place. And it's still a journey. But it's special to be a part of a message like that and be a part of Mardi Gras.
Good stuff. Hey, listen, great to see you this morning. Thank you for coming in. You look bright and strong and
Thank
all things
you.
Going good. Kylie gets a song and a koala. We love people who bring gifts. Day, mate.
Day, mate.
Good to see you.
Thank Jack
you.
Vigen's new single, it's called Pray. It is available right now. You can catch him performing at the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras. That is on the 6th of March.
Well, it's a really elite club when you can just use your like your first name and your surname initial. It doesn't work for Kylie G, Larry E doesn't work.
But there Larry. Are,
Larry. Yes, no, that's why it doesn't work. But there are a few who can do this whole thing. Cardi B, Mel B, Kim K, and of course, Sally O.
Sally O. Sally Obermeier is a TV presenter, best-selling author and morning show fave. But after one of the most unusual years of her life, the star is still putting her best foot forward with plenty of new projects on the go. Hello, Sally O. Sally Obermeier.
Hello, guys.
It's
nice to be back.
Nice to have you.
Nice to
here.
See you.
Last year, full of highs and lows.
Yes.
Let's
definitely.
Focus. Yeah, good news. How's it all going?
This year is good. I think it took me a bit of time to recover. I think whenever you go through a big change, you need a bit of time to kind of, I guess, catch up and kind of catch my breath and kind of find my footing again. But yeah, this year is great. This year it's like, okay, this is what I do now. I've got a business, which I've had for a while. This is what I focus on. Obviously, we've got the girls. So yeah. I feel better.
Not only a business with a bit of focus, Mark Burris, business guru before, was on the couch, and he mentioned in the commercial break as someone who's incredibly passionate and obsessed with their business and has done everything right.
So
we know you're just not a TV person dabbling on the side. This is something you've really worked hard at and building incredibly well.
That's very, I love Mark. That's a huge compliment coming from him. Yeah, it's been a long time. I've had the business for 8 years now, and it has taken, like any small business, you work, you know, your guts out to keep it on its feet, and every time you hire a new person, you do everything you can to keep them and all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of stress that comes with it, but the joy that comes with it is also massive, because to see people have your products and feel better and feel like, you know, I guess to see change, that is something that really touches our heart.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and this is the new space, which is just awesome. This has got a kitchen in it, this new space, as part of your headquarters. So any new cookbooks on the horizon? Here's the kitchen here.
Here's the kitchen being built.
Yeah, yes. Any new cookbook sale? Because your recipes are amazing. So easy and so tasty.
I do love a cook. You know, like we've done, I think, 5 cookbooks now. There's definitely something swirling around in my mind. What cookbook would you guys buy?
I'd like to buy Sal's burger yeah. book.
And burgers and buffalo wings, actually.
Burgers and buffalo wings
with a side
done
of chips.
Right.
Yeah.
with a kale chip, maybe. Would you do that
coming,
for me?
Coming soon to you, yeah.
Now, on the family front, your youngest, gorgeous Alyssa has just started school,
she
right?
She started school. I can't believe it. So she's in prep. So she's 4 years old. And I think when you've got the second one, look at her there. The bag is like bigger than her and there's nothing in it except her lunchbox. So she was so keen to go to school. I think seeing Annabelle already there, she was desperate to go. So it's been nice as well for me, I think, to have this time to get her settled in and for me to adjust to her going. You know, yeah. I was certainly more emotional than I thought I would be, but it's been nice to see her.
You're a softie.
You know I'm a softie. Yeah, thriving at school, which is good.
Yeah, and speaking of thriving, you're an auntie now. Maha had beautiful little Joshua.
Yes. How good is it when you have a nephew or a niece, and it's like that urge that I had to have a baby is now resolved. But Maha very kindly had that baby for me, and so it's great. It's like all the upside, all the sniffing and the cuddling and all the hugs, but I'm not tired.
Isn't that, and of course, Maha being your sister, but also your business partner as well. So you guys have this incredible sister act, which is beautiful to see.
We do have a nice relationship. I think it's really important. It's been nice, I think, for me also to make sure that she's got some time away from the business. She'll be watching this as she's typing on her laptop going, what do you mean more time away? I'm working.
He left me tasks to do, Sally. Right. What are you talking about?
But yeah, she's got this time with Joshua, which is so nice because, you know, I think she has been wanting to have a baby for so long and he was so hard fought for, so it's so special. So it's nice.
How's the year ahead look? What's going on?
It looks busy. It looks very busy on the business front with a lot of product expansion, which we're really excited about. But also, I've left myself enough kind of empty space just to see what comes up. And I think that's important. I haven't kind of jammed it full and assumed anything. It's like I've left it open to see what goes on.
That's what I do between 9 and 11.30 every day. I just leave an empty space and go, what's going to happen now?
Wide open.
Let's see where Kylie takes me.
Yeah, just see what goes.
Next thing you know, you'll be hosting a game show, Sally, if you adopt that attitude. So maybe there's something in it.
Just wait and see.
You never know.
Thank you, Sal. It's beautiful to see you.
Nice to see you. Burgers and wings
and wings and cow chips. Great to see you, Sal.
Well, heart disease is still the single biggest cause of deaths in Australia. Every day, 170 people have a heart attack. That's equal to one every 10 minutes.
With one in 20 Aussies currently affected by heart disease, knowing what to do in an emergency can be a matter of life and death. So, what are the warning signs you need to watch out for, and what are the dangerous mistakes you could be making?
CEO of Heart Research Australia, Nikki Dent, joins us live in the studio. Hi, Nikki. Great to see you.
Thanks for having me on.
Knowing how to survive a heart attack, well, it's vital in any sort of emergency situation. You say there are two dangerous mistakes that people could be making.
Yeah, the first is that mistake people make is people often thinking that the signs and symptoms are the same for everybody. And the second mistake I see people making is dismissing the symptoms and thinking they'll just go away. Mm. And sadly, that results in people not acting quickly enough.
Yeah.
Obviously, if we think you're having a heart attack, the best course of action is to dial 000 because ambulance help workers can help straight away, and the 000 can give you advice over the phone. They might tell you, for instance, to take aspirin if you can take aspirin, if you're not allergic to it. Mm-hmm. And then when the ambulance is there, they can take your numbers, put that information over to the hospital so the hospital can be ready, a team waiting for you when you come in, just to speed it all up.
There are many different symptoms to look out for. What are some of the warning signs that we'll get first?
Yeah, the warning signs, I mean, many people think it's just like in the movies, you get that sudden chest pain and you fall to the ground. And if all heart attacks were like that, it'd be very easy to know when to go to hospital. But in reality, whilst chest pain is the leading symptom, there are other symptoms. Mm. And they can be, as well as the chest pain, the pain in the jaw, neck, shoulders or arms, indigestion or suddenly feeling dizzy or lightheaded. It's a whole range of symptoms. And as part of our Red Feb event this month, you can have a free pocket guide which shows the signs and symptoms of a heart attack. Mm. And it tells you what you can do, because sometimes it's difficult to remember all those symptoms.
Oh, absolutely. Sure. Now, women tend to experience some of these symptoms maybe a little bit differently to men. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Women's symptoms, I mean, the leading symptom is still that chest pain, mm-hmm. but they can also be much more likely to experience pain in the jaw, neck, shoulder and arm, and pain in the back, and the vomiting and nausea. So those are the sorts of things to look out for.
Okay. Well, what should we do if we think someone is having a heart attack? We're standing by. We're there.
Yeah. So the best thing that you can do is call 000 and get the ambulance there. I do see people making mistakes about driving themselves to hospital or even somebody else driving them to hospital. So if you're driving yourself to hospital, obviously you could have an accident if you could black out. And if someone is driving you to hospital, they may need to perform CPR on you. So you're much better dialing 000 if you're there with someone, keeping them calm until the ambulance comes.
Okay. So prevention is the best medicine when it comes to heart health, though, isn't it? It can be overwhelming to know where to start. What's some good tips for us to, like, just be, you know, have a healthy heart?
Yeah, well, at Heart Research Australia, we try to keep it simple by recommending the 4 M's approach. And the first M stands for move, keep moving at any age and any level of fitness. The second M stands for meals. So
be intelligent. Watch them. Watch your meals. Is what you're saying.
Yeah, think about what your meals are. eat intelligently, know what you're eating, and also watch your portion size. Mm. And the third M is for measurement. So know your numbers, your weight, your blood pressure, your cholesterol. Yeah. And my recommendation is if you're going to the doctors, just make a note of what those numbers are. So if they're changing, you can early on intervene and do something about that.
And mental health is the last one. It's a huge one this year, on the back of last year particularly, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Lots of studies have shown that your mental health can protect you as well as damage your heart health. So our recommendation is find any way to stay optimistic.
Okay. Now this month, Heart Research Australia is urging people to take part in Red Feb. How do we get involved?
So Heart Research Australia funds research into the prevention, diagnosis and treatment of heart disease. And all this month we've got our Red Feb event. We're inviting people to wear red for someone close to your heart. So whether that's yourself, a family member or a loved one. And we've got a whole range of things happening. Some people having red perms and some runs and some walks and cycle rides.
Great stuff. Lots of great things happening.
Well, we'll make sure we put all the info on our website as well. And to find out more and how you can support Red Feb and Heart Research Australia, you can head across to our website.
And you've worn your red today.
I've worn my red today.
Yeah, I was going to dye my hair red, but couldn't help, unfortunately. Good stuff. Thank you very much. It's the multi-million dollar stage show that was dramatically shut down when COVID-19 struck last year. But after a 49-week hiatus, Harry Potter and the Cursed Child is officially back.
The world-class production has been given the all-clear to lift the curtain, with the cast returning to the stage for the first time last night. So how has the award-winning play changed in this brave new world? Deborah Lawrence is just one of the cast returning to spread a little magic in Melbourne. Deborah's with us now. You're back. Almost a full year that the show was put on hold. How hard was that, not knowing what was going to happen, Deborah?
Yeah, well, 345 days, so it's not surprising that we all counted it. When we first were put on hiatus, it was a month. And then all the tickets were pushed back and people were very understanding. And then it was a couple of months and then we finally had big lockdown. And then it was, we didn't know. But the producers did an amazing effort, Michael Castle Group, negotiating with the state government and working it out as to how to get audiences back. And there's a COVID-safe document that's been drafted by Mariner Group and Michael Castle to make sure that everybody backstage, on stage and in the auditorium are really, really safe. So, yeah, it's lovely.
Good
lovely
stuff.
To be back.
Hey, Deb, some productions like Frozen and Shrek managed to open in Sydney and Brizzy late last year. You guys, the cast and crew there in Melbourne, must have been champing at the bit to get back on stage.
Yeah, we were. And I Come From Away is also reopened around the corner as well. But ours is a really big production. So there's 70 people backstage plus the cast and there's the front of house crew. So it was a big consideration and a logistical effort to get all of those people working safely back in the theatre. So it's a bit bigger than the others in some ways, I think. So but we're finally there. We're back. We're back.
Oh, that's amazing. So putting backstage to one side, as an audience member, is there going to be anything different or are we going to see the magic just as it was before COVID?
Oh, yeah. Look, there's everything. The show is so tight. Like, it's choreographed within an inch of its life for 5 hours that it's on, the two part, part one and part two. And the only difference is that you'll have a mask on your face. And that really is the only difference. Everything else is exactly the same. And the magic is still extraordinary. We can still hear people gasping. We can hear people crying. We can hear people laughing themselves sick. So it's just that you have to sit there with a mask on.
Terrific.
For that period of time. So,
hey, so listen, one of your characters is in the role made famous by Dame Maggie Smith in the films. So how different would you say is your Professor McGonagall to hers?
Well, I'm younger than Maggie
yes.
Smith.
Yes, you are.
She's got a steamed Scottish accent. She still says Porter, Mr. Porter. But look, it's an archetypal character that was created by J.K. Rowling. So I'm playing Minerva McGonagall, and Maggie, there she is on screen, being very fine. And look, I'm wearing green as well. You just play Minerva and everybody knows who she is. In fact, when we could speak to the audience after the show in 2019, people would say, oh, you were just like Maggie Smith. And I think I took that as a compliment.
Yeah. Oh, you yes. should. The Cursed Child is the eighth story in the Harry Potter series. A very different experience to the movies. What can you tell us about the show as far as the Harry Potter storyline goes?
What's lovely about this is that apparently J.K. Rowling has been approached by lots of people wanting to do musicals and all sorts of things, and please, you know, write the eighth book, write the eighth movie, etc. And then Sonia Friedman, the lovely, amazing British producer, went to her with an idea about the two boys, Draco Malfoy's son and Harry's son, meeting each other on Hogwarts Express on the way to first year Hogwarts. And because they were both raised by damaged dads, like who'd been through the Wizarding Wars and all that darkness. So it was it's a really interesting story. So then they meet on Hogwarts Express and end up going on incredible adventures for 5.5 hours. So it's a really good story. So anybody who knows anything about Harry Potter, all of the references to all of the characters and all of the little scenarios are in there. And even if you haven't seen or you haven't read a book, it's still entertaining. And I mean, the magic itself is gobsmacking You're enough right. to keep you occupied.
So, well, Deb, this is great news for you and the rest of the cast, all the crew, and of course the fans who will be busting to get back and see that. You're back, well and truly. Good to see you. Thanks for joining us.
Back for part two tonight. Thank you, Deb. Okay. Tickets for Harry Potter and the Cursed Child at Melbourne's Princess Theatre are available right now. We'll put all the links over on themorningshow.com.au.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Well, he's a self-made millionaire and uber-successful businessman. Mark Burris knows what it takes to get ahead and turn times of change into moments of opportunity.
But he's not keeping his secrets to himself. The Money Mentor is also committed to helping others financially prosper despite the odds. And in his new book, Rise, Mark details how to tackle the hard times and reset your goals even in the face of a global downturn. Mark Burris joins us live. Hello, nice to see you.
Good morning, Kylie. Good morning. Good morning, Larry.
A lot of millionaires would be very protective of their secrets, their business secrets. You want to share?
Yeah, I mean, like, what else you do when you get to a certain age? You just pay forward. For me, I mean, I've been lucky in my life. I've been, let's call it mentored, or I've had experiences with some of the greatest businessmen this country's ever produced. I don't know why that happened to me, but I just feel like I've got to pay back.
Okay. Everyone wants to know the one magic thing that will make them money. Like, everyone wants to know that. Is there such a thing, or is it a puzzle of a million different things?
Well, it's like trying to get fit. There's no such thing as a magic bullet. I mean, there's a whole lot of commitments you've got to make. So I would probably say, first and foremost, is just effort. It's about continual efforts, and lots of them, and for a long period of time. So that requires you to be patient, and don't expect things to fall in your lap straight away. So effort and patience are probably two of the big secrets that most successful businessmen will tell you have helped them get to where they got to.
Let's talk about your book. It's called Rise, so equal parts educational and personal story as well. What are we going to learn about Mark Burris in this book, Rise?
Well, one of the assumptions for people like me is that, oh, wow, he's made all his money and he's, you know, lives this great life. You said uber successful. I would never use that word about myself. But one of the things you're going to learn about is I make lots of mistakes, and all people like me make lots of mistakes. But it's about our ability to recover, and what do we do about our mistakes. Mm-hmm. So I read a really interesting book recently by a guy who, his name is John Kavanagh, and he's actually the trainer for Conor McGregor, and he wrote a book called Win or Learn. And that's really hit home to me. It's about trying your best and winning all the time. But if you don't win, you don't think about it as a loss. You could try and learn from it. So for me, one of the things that good businessmen do, they make lots of mistakes, but they learn from those mistakes and then they try and work out a strategy around it.
A lot of small businesses, a lot of businesses, all businesses around the world, looking back at the last year going, we've really got kicked in the guts here, right? So you see the global, current global disruption as a bit of a reset of sorts, don't you?
I do. And that reset, it's funny because in my business, Yellow Brick Road, one of the resets that I did at the beginning of the year, apart from writing this book, beginning of last year, beginning of the COVID period, is I sat down and I worked out, well, what expenses can I save? So I reset my business in terms of the size of my premises, which have now been reduced to half, which is a cost that I save. I've reset my business in terms of the number of people in my organisation and the productivity of those number of people. I've reset my business in terms of who works from home and who doesn't work from home. And as a result of that, I was able to put myself in a position that I saved a lot of cash. Now, my revenues were sort of, they were rising slightly, but I saved a lot of cash. Now, that reset will allow me to take advantage of, say, the mortgage market for 2021, which is now on fire. Mm. Now, I never knew that was going to happen. And to be frank with you, I thought we were going to be in terrible straits with COVID. But 1 year later, here we are, 30-odd days in New South Wales, no community cases. We're rolling out vaccines, et cetera, left, right and centre. So, and the property market's just taken off. It's out of control. And the mortgage market goes with that. So I reset my business in the right way. And I think most business guys that I and girls out there who have done well in the last 12 months have done exactly that. They've reset their position around costs, around efficiencies, around productivity, around premises and those sorts of things.
In the book, you tell us we need to play to our strengths. You ask, are you a cutter or a sower? So what do you mean by that?
Well, some people cut, some people sew. So I'm what they call a cutter. So some people call it big thinker. I don't want to say I'm a big thinker. I'm always planning and thinking and conjuring things.
Cutting the pattern.
Like, yeah, correct. Yeah. Just like a suit. You cut it, you can cut it. It looks like it looks right. It's proportion, but it's about the material and the sense of the style and design. But then you've got to get someone who sews it. And it doesn't stick together. It doesn't have any longevity unless you've got someone to sew. So in business, you need to have a cutter and a sewer. All my businesses, I have people who sew behind me. Some people, they say that they're sweeping up the mess, but it is sewing behind me. You need to be, and work out which one you are. It's very hard to be both.
Okay. Now, people might have this image of you, this sort of 110% focused, up at 4:30 in the morning, boxing away, and then straight to business and meetings back to back on 24/7, 365 days. Is there a time where you actually switch off?
And I make myself switch off, yes. It's not a natural thing. I don't sort of, like, ever ready battery run out. I will not apologise for being obsessive in the way I do things. And I think business people should not be embarrassed about saying they're obsessed with their business as long as it's a good idea and a right idea, has a good intention. I don't think you should be worried about being obsessed, but you need to step back from yourself, so to speak, and have a look where you are and say, OK, I need a day off, or I need to go, in my case, I'm lucky I can go to my farm, or I need to spend some time with my grandson or my family. I mean, those types of things. You need to actually interject in your process, in your obsession. So control your obsession. Nothing wrong with being obsessed as long as you recognise it, you accept it, and you control it.
Yeah. All right. Good to talk to you as always, Mark.
Same here.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much.
Mark's new book is called Rise, full of fascinating stories and great advice. It is out now. That was just his COVID project. Just a little something he knocked
up. A little hustle
up.
On the side.
Thanks, right. Mark.
Jenny Rivett's career in the gym has seen her work out with some very impressive clients, from making Liz Hurley do lunges to spending 7 years helping Princess Diana perfect her form.
Training the royal in the years following her very public separation from Prince Charles, the two became close friends and confidants. Now the fitness guru is looking back at her time with the People's Princess and inspiring women to get fit, firm and fabulous at every age. And Jenny Rivett joins us live from London this morning. Welcome, Jenny.
Hi, thank you so much. Lovely to be on your show.
That's lovely.
It's 11 o'clock at night.
It's lovely to see you. First, it is important to acknowledge that before Princess Diana passed away, you say she specifically gave you her blessing to speak about your time training together. I know that's important for you to say that. What were her original reasons for wanting a personal trainer?
Well, I think in the 90s, personal training was a very new concept. And she liked the idea of having someone come up to Kensington Palace to train her if you know, if she was busy and she had an engagement to go to, then the idea really appealed to her to have somebody to come up to the palace. And she also mentioned that she was intrigued to meet me because she had heard about me at three different dinner parties.
Okay. Now, you ended up working with her for like 7 years, right? Some people hate training with their PT. Others really love it. How was Diana as a client?
She was absolutely amazing. She was completely and utterly committed to her training, and I really think she missed the session. She was great fun. We had a good laugh when we trained together. And, you know, I think she loved her training. She honestly did. And I think that's because the results we got from her training were just phenomenal, as you can see. And that motivated her to want to continue training. She learned so much from me about, you know, correct form and exercise technique. And often when we were in the gym together, she would see somebody doing something bad and she would say, Jenny, you need to go over and correct that person, you know, which of course I would never do.
You formed a very tight bond over the years, but you weren't always aware of royal protocol, you say.
That's right. I didn't realise that I was supposed to curtsy to her, and for 4 years I never curtsied. And one day we were walking in Kensington Gardens, and her best friend, who I also used to train, walked in the opposite direction and curtsied to the princess, and I was totally taken aback. So the next time I saw my client, I asked her, why did you curtsy to your best friend? And she said, well, Jenny, it's protocol. You're not curtsying to the princess, you're curtsying to the crown. So I was mortified. So the next time I saw Princess Di, I said, look, I'm really sorry. We're going to spend this whole entire lesson curtsying because I owe you 4 years of. And she just basically said, Jenny, you know what, please don't worry. You're a South African, and that's why I love you, because you just wouldn't have known any difference, and please don't ever curtsy to me.
So what exercises did Diana enjoy most? Did she enjoy the flexibility because she had that old ballet background and dance background, or did she enjoy cardio? What can we do?
So she loved to get a sweat on, so I did this little low-impact hit cardio that I used to do with her. And of course she had those lean, long legs, and we just worked on making those even better than they were. And she also loved, she loved all the leg routines that we did, you know, the lunges and the squats and deep intensive lying down exercises for the glutes and the legs. But she also loved her arms to be toned, and she used to love how they looked in evening gowns. So we worked hard on getting her arms toned, but not bulked up. And yes, she was incredibly flexible, and she was very proud of that.
Mm. Okay. Now, you're a pioneer in the fitness industry for many years now, but you have a big focus on women over 40. Why is that such a passion for you?
I think in one word, results. The feedback that I've got from hundreds of women around the globe that I train have just been phenomenal. And so what I've done is, that's my passion. So what I've done is I've blended my experience with new research and science to come up with my Train Like a Woman formula. And it's just been such a success. It works. It helps women over 40 to balance their hormones, stabilize their blood sugar levels, and just to feel awesome. So it really has been a winner for me. And I want every woman over 40 to know that age is absolutely no barrier when it comes to exercise.
Indeed, because we know you train a number of celebrities like Liz Hurley and Lorraine Kelly, who's on TV over there in the States, in London. You were already teaching fitness classes before COVID, virtually, but now you've expanded your classes since lockdown?
Yes, you know, lockdown has actually been phenomenal for my business, and it's been such a blessing for me to go online and literally jump out of bed and have hundreds of women from around the globe working out with me, and because I'm so passionate about sharing that knowledge. And literally every day I get requests for new members to join my classes. So it's been a great success, and I think it's wonderful for so many women who have been intimidated by gyms. They don't necessarily want to go and, you know, train in a gym, and the online training has been great, and I found that to be the case with my training. Mm-hmm. So it's just...
Well, Jenny, great to talk to you this morning, and thank you for staying up so late. What, like 11 o'clock at night there? We do appreciate that. Good to chat.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on.
Okay, according to our last welfare report, 51% of Australians felt lonely at least one day every week. And since the pandemic, one in two Aussies are feeling even more lonely than before.
With isolation linked to poor physical and mental health, those are some worrying statistics, aren't they? But what are the real reasons for our loneliness, and how do we stop being strangers and become more connected to the world around us?
And the author of When We Become Strangers, Maggie Hamilton, joins us live on the couch. Welcome. Lovely to see you, Maggie.
Thank you.
Sometimes we think of loneliness as just being alone, but you say there are actually a few different ways that we can feel lonely, that that affects us.
Absolutely. I mean, I think we tend to think it's kind of crying alone in your bedroom, but it's often a feeling of feeling adrift and that it's nobody you have a meaningful connection who really sees you. So we can be lonely towards others, but we can also be lonely towards who we are really if we are so caught up with trying to please and compete and doing what other people yeah. want. And thirdly, we're sensory beings. We need touch, taste, etc. Mm. And that's what helps bring us alive. And if we don't have that aliveness, which we get if we go for a walk in the park, we can start to feel really alienated.
Talk about the iGen. This is people under 25. Yeah. They're the most vulnerable when it comes to loneliness. I'm yeah. surprised by that because you think of young people as having lots of friends and always going out and doing things.
Absolutely. This was a surprise to me too. But what's happened is we've got a whole generation of kids who spent so much time in their bedrooms on their devices. They don't have those face-to-face skills, so they get out into the workplace, into dating, etc. And they find it really hard to connect. And so there's that sense, again, of feeling like you're on a different page.
And a lot of parents struggling to connect or reconnect with their kids because yeah. of these devices. What are some ways we can help connect better with our kids?
Yeah, well, what I've found is that actually kids need more holding and touching. So, you know, if you're watching telly together, huddle up close, story times, you know, sharing family stories. Kids need to know where they come from, and we tend to stop talking about that. And also to really encourage our children to connect with community. So they need to see us connecting and making their own little connections so they can do it when they grow up.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's really important. They can only do what they see, right?
Absolutely.
You say that mums and dads overshare about their kids online. It might be a warning sign that parents are lonely.
Yeah, now this is a bit of a surprise perhaps, but the fact is that if we're sharing everything online about what we're doing at any moment of the day, again, that is time not spent connecting in the real world. And one of the great tips is not just to get out there and be with your generation, but actually to have friendships across the generation, because parenting is very intense. And if you're around other parents all the time, it can feel like it's all a big drama. Mm. Different generational friendships kind of takes the pressure yeah. off.
Okay, now it's we all love a good TV binge, particularly
we
over
do.
The last year.
But
you tell us that watching too much reality TV can have a high impact on loneliness.
Yeah, now this is an interesting one. And one of the key things is that we start to get very judgmental. She's a winner, he's a loser. And if we're not careful, this can really tip over into everyday life. And so we actually are, you know, kind of writing people off. And let's face it, we're all good at some things and hopeless at others. And if you go a bit further into a friendship, with a likely friendship, instead of writing people off, suddenly you find you've got this really interesting person in your life.
Yeah. I never thought of it that way. It's really interesting. You've got some tips for us. People might be sitting at home suddenly going, I can relate to that. Yes, that sounds like me. You've got some tips for us, Maggie.
Yeah, well, I think the thing is, one is the whole thing of getting out into nature so that you're actually, your senses are there. Be aware of your moods. Get out and explore. Become curious about life. Eating together is really, really important because it's the joy of shared time together, as is embracing your passions.
I love that last one, practice enoughness. That's yeah. that's basically gratitude, is that what you're saying?
It is, and you know, we are in a very competitive culture, and just to step back for a minute and say, actually, do I feel I have enough in this area of my life for now? Doesn't mean it had to be for all time. And actually stay with the joy of that moment or that period in your life rather than racing on to the next thing and the next. Mm.
All right, terrific. Maggie, thanks for your time this morning.
Great
really
pleasure.
Important information. It's Maggie Hamilton's new book, When We Become Strangers, is out now.
Well, you'd think all singing, all dancing families only exist on the screen. The Partridge Family set the 70s alight. The Von Trapps taught us Do, Re, Mi. Even the Brady Bunch gave group singing a go. But today, in 2021, it's the Sharp Family carrying on the tradition in real life.
Who loves you, pretty baby? Who's gonna help you through the night? Who loves you, pretty mama? Who's always there to make it right?
Former Broadway stars Ron and Barbara Sharp lead this fine-tuned family with kids Samantha, Logan, Aiden and Connor all sharing their talents on TikTok, scoring over 98 million likes. Throw in a boyfriend, a best friend and a chihuahua and you got yourself one all-star singing family. And the entire Sharp family join us right now fresh from the merchandise store to get their new hoodies from Orlando, Florida. Hi, guys. Hey, Ron, you can all sing. This is terrific for us to watch and listen to. Let's go back to where it all began. Where did you and Barb meet?
Well, Barbara and I met on the Broadway stage of Les Miserables. I was playing Marius. She's playing Cosette. We got married on stage 1,000 times, and then we really got married.
And the rest is history. Barbara, the kids that convinced you all to start on TikTok. There are some family meetings to plan videos. Is that right? What do these meetings look like?
Yeah, well, and we do every Sunday, we get together and we have meetings about what we want to do. And we do about 4 TikToks a week. Yeah, and then we kind of argue over who gets their TikTok done that week. Usually they...
Hey, Logan, you led the idea to join TikTok in the first place, right? Now, in the meetings, does Dad ever show his age when he makes a song request, or do you let him know it's trending?
All the time. I'm the police of telling him when, you know, he's a little too old. He thinks of this century, you know what I'm saying? But, yeah, 100%.
I'm the low man on the totem pole with the TikToks. With our concerts, I'm the high man, but here I just show up and act and sing.
Right.
Samantha, the TikToks have opened you all up to new opportunities. Now, we heard you got the call to be on American Idol. Is that right?
Yes, I did. I was so excited. It never would have happened if it wasn't for the whole family. They loved all of us, and then they wanted me in particular, and it's a dream come true. I'm so excited.
Wow.
It's this weekend.
This Sunday in the whole family sings for the judges. You'll see.
Yeah, everybody.
That looks great. Hey, Aiden and Connor, you two steal the show in many of the videos. What are the best things about singing with your family? Because a lot of young guys wouldn't like to sing with their families.
Well, every time we do TikToks, and sometimes we mess up and everybody just laughs, and we always sing.
Oh, yeah.
Bloopers.
Bloopers are fun.
We were in the swimming pool, and they had a couple girls that said, I think I know who they are, and they wanted me to go talk to them to see if they knew them from TikTok. So it's worked out really well.
Because every time I went next to them, they just screamed, like the worst liars I've ever met.
So we wanted to play another clip that you posted on your TikTok. It's called Normal Families versus Singing Families. Let's have a look.
Dinner's ready.
Who's hungry?
Me.
Okay, so I'm guessing that maybe isn't real, but are your road trips just off the charts? Because does everyone try and, like, sing along with the radio, or what happens?
It's nonstop singing. You'll have headaches the whole car ride. Any friends I bring are like this the whole time. We just sing the whole car ride.
And we're all very loud, so we can't complain about one person. Our whole family is loud.
Our TikToks are real life for us.
So if you have a friend, kids, if you have a friend who comes around and they can't sing, you probably have to drop them as friends, right? You cannot have friends who can't sing.
They become like, the cameraman.
I find every person up in my neighborhood and I pick who can sing and who cannot.
Because Ron and Barbara, I was going to say that how fortunate you are, Broadway stars, but you've had 4 children that can sing. There isn't like another child in the basement somewhere, the non-singing one, is there?
That's always the joke people make about us.
Where's the kid in the basement?
Yeah, there is a way to keep one in the closet and then they can only videotape it.
And when people don't like it, they say Chewy was the best singer, our dog, and he doesn't sing.
Hey, Ron, you guys really are going global right now. You got this podcast thing going on. Congratulations on that. Is there anything the Sharps can't do? You guys are just taking over the world.
Well, you know, actually, they're doing a special play for folks down in Australia tomorrow at 1 o'clock. They're going to play our episode. Yes. 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Build-A-Bear Radio.
Build-A-Bear Radio on Sirius iHeart. And, you know, it's been great. You know, American Idol's good. We've been working with the group for a reality show. You know, when I watch the clips you played of the Partridge Family and the Brady Bunch and the Sound of Music, we're kind of all of them wrapped in one. We really are.
Monday.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And then, and you know what? The music is just beautiful. I love it. It's been a delight talking to you this morning. Thanks, guys. Thank you, Sharps.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
See you guys. Well, the global beauty industry is worth more than $500 billion. That's a lot of lippy liner and lash extensions, right? But thanks to the rise of counterfeit cosmetics, you don't always get what you pay for. And worse, the damage can be more costly than just a dent in your bank balance.
Face creams containing mercury, eyeshadow laced with lead, urine in perfume, formaldehyde in eyelash glue. Authorities have seen a huge spike in dangerous and sometimes fatal products being sold online, particularly social media. So how can consumers bypass black market beauty products, and what are lawmakers doing to protect shoppers against copycat cosmetics?
Let's get some answers here to break down the good, the bad and the downright ugly. Joe Uchukwulo from Handle My Complaint. Hey, Joe, with online shopping, potentially dangerous products are really just a click away, right? What are the most common beauty counterfeits?
So the most common counterfeit beauty products are foundation, lipsticks and perfumes. And why that is they're also the, you know, part of the most common beauty products we use that are easy to reproduce. So what I find challenging around counterfeit beauty products is I like to think that we're a little bit more concerned with what we put into our bodies and on our bodies rather than, you know, what brand names we're putting out to what our friends and families can see. So that's where we see a lot of warnings around dodgy ingredients in beauty products, and, you know, we'll cover some of those today.
Okay, so does it make it difficult for individual countries to police, given the fact that cosmetics are sold globally? Like, hello, it's full of cosmetics on social media.
Yeah, so the global trade industry has gotten bigger and bigger, and so has the internet. So what we see a really significant rise in counterfeit beauty products for this reason. And because we have these syndicates moving cosmetics around the globe, it also makes it really challenging for police to, you know, obviously take action when they do know there's a counterfeit product.
Joe, it sounds like a little bit or a lot of common sense. Like, if you see a high-end lipstick being sold for $3, alarm bells should start ringing, right? But these counterfeit operations are highly sophisticated, and they're very sneaky and slick tactics aren't always that obvious. So what are some signs that you bought an imitation?
Yeah, Larry, you raise a good point. When it's $3 and it should be $60, it's easy to spot. But remember, there's a lot of borderline cases here where people want to believe they're getting the genuine item. So I say there's five P's to look out for. Price, is it significantly reduced, more so than you'd see in say, a department store? Where are you buying it from? Are you buying it from a reputable seller or somewhere that's unknown, like a market or a marketplace? Packaging, this is a really telltale sign that you've got a fake product. Have a look for typos, grammatical mistakes, weird fuzzy pictures. Sometimes fakers can say it's a limited edition product, whereas really they've just faked you a product.
Okay. If an obvious rip-off arrives on your doorstep, what are your rights? Can you return it, make a complaint? I think what they count on is the fact that we can't be bothered half the time. It's more trouble than what it's worth.
Well, Kylie, I hate to say it, but fakers are thieves. So it's really hard to get any sort of outcome from a thief. If they come and burgle your house, they're not going to return your goods. So if you buy from a faker, it's really, really hard to get any money back or even to get them to respond. So if you do unfortunately end up with a fake product, you know, it's best if you can report it to the authorities, to the brand, and also try to raise awareness to other consumers. So putting reviews onto that profile is also really helpful.
Okay. Hey, Joe, Kylie Jenner has previously spoken out about knockoffs from her beauty line, Kylie Cosmetics. And one particular raid in 2018 found bogus products containing animal feces and bacteria and high levels of metals even. So these can be really, really damaging to people.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's damaging to the consumer and it's also damaging to the brand. As you mentioned, there's all sorts of foreign, you know, articles in those cosmetics when they're faked. There's a story out of the UK. A man has been taken to court for selling fake MAC lipsticks. They had 300 times the level of lead that's allowed. Wow. And lead can cause everything from high blood pressure to neurological problems in the person and unborn babies. So, you know, that's it's really concerning from the human level, from the person buying it, but also from the brand, because then it starts devaluing the brand. You know, if you do see your friend has that particular brand on their bathroom cabinet, is it real? Is it fake? You know, it's a lose-lose situation for everyone.
Okay, let's finish on an important message. How can shoppers stay safe, Jo?
So the best thing to do is buy direct from the brand or from a reputable place. Check for any reviews. Ask for extra pictures. Really examine them and look for ingredients lists. Like you mentioned, Larry, use your best judgment. Use some common sense. If it sounds too good, seems too good, buy somewhere else.
Yeah, and Google, as you say, Google that website and you'll find plenty of reviews come up if other people have been ripped off. It's the first thing you should probably do. Thank you, Jo.
Thanks.
There we go, another podcast done. How are you finding being a famous, fabulous podcast in our cult?
Oh, I'm liking it.
You're liking
no
that?
No hair, no makeup. I can just sit here in my trackies.
Hey, too early for no hair jokes.
For more on today's interviews, you can head to themorningshow.com.au or you can watch in full living colour full episodes on 7+.
That's the one with full hair and full makeup. Yes. Don't forget to tune into The Morning Show weekdays right after sunrise.
And hit that subscribe button to get the next Morning Show podcast as soon as it drops. Does it drop or does it pop up?
Oh, no. We drop it like it's hot. Thanks for listening. See ya.
Bye.